In the gospel, we hear Jesus trying to explain what the second coming is going to be like and how we should be ready for it. So Jesus is there present with his apostles, which is the first coming. And as we know, the second coming would be the end of the world. And he's trying to explain to them how they should act when this is to happen. And I don't know about you, but I kind of got fired up when I read it. It's kind of like a call to action. It's almost like a pump-up speech that a coach gives to a team or like a general before a big fight. I think of like the movie Braveheart or Lord of the Rings, right? When they're about to go out and they're about to fight, he says that we're not supposed to have a lot of possessions so that we can move easily. We know what our goal is. It's this kingdom. We know where we're going. He says we're supposed to light our lamps so you know where you're going. We're supposed to gird our loins, which what that means is the men would wear these long tunics and they would hike them up and tie them around their belt so that they could run easy. They were being called to action. They're supposed to be waiting as these servants in the middle of the night for their Lord to come. And this is what we're supposed to do for the second coming. And when he's done explaining that, Peter asks the question in which all of us are thinking. Peter says, is this for us? Are you meaning this teaching for us or for the people who don't really know you? And the way in which Jesus responds, he says, yeah, I mean this especially for you, especially for the people who are faithful. And then Peter's life comes and goes. 2,000 years later, come and go. And we're still here waiting. We have this call to action, this call to movement, this huge speech, how we're supposed to act. And we're still waiting 2,000 years later. So how is Jesus not really seen as like a little boy who cries wolf? How are we supposed to see him as credible when we're still waiting and what he has said still hasn't come to fruition? Especially because I'm sure a lot of the apostles thought that this second coming was going to happen during their lifetime. I mean, if you hear a speech like that, I'd be like, all right, any moment this is going to happen, right? As soon as he leaves, any moment this is going to happen. And then it doesn't. So as a Christian, how are we supposed to understand what Jesus is trying to teach us? I think there are two things that really help us understand this. The first is that frustration happens in our life, especially in our prayer life, when we demand to have the knowledge of God, and yet we're limited to have the knowledge of humans. We demand to know when this is going to happen, but when it comes down to it, we just don't know. We don't have the knowledge of God, and frustration happens then. Right? Jesus goes into this big analogy on how we're supposed to be vigilant. We're supposed to be watching. He said, if the master of the house knew at what moment his house was going to be broken into, he would have been waiting. In other words, if we knew when this second coming was going to happen, we would be waiting, right? Everyone would be going to confession and be like, all right, this is the date. We all need to go to confession by this date. The end of the world's going to happen. And that's just not the case. We don't know when that's going to happen. And frustration is built on that because we have this promise and yet we're still here waiting. The second thing is that this attitude of anticipation that Jesus is talking about, this being vigilant, this waiting, really is the attitude of a Christian. So everything that Jesus said is correct. Even though he hasn't come during the apostles' life, during our lifetime, or most likely in the next generation, even though that hasn't happened, what he says is still true. We are still supposed to have that attitude of vigilance. We're not supposed to be satisfied with really what we see in this world. C.S. Lewis talks about the different desires that the human person has, right? So I have this desire for food, so therefore God made food. I have desire for friendship, so therefore God has made other people. And he ends by saying, if there is a desire that cannot be satisfied by something in this world, maybe that means we were not made for this world. And that's exactly true. We have this restlessness within us. We understand that there really isn't anything that can be satisfied by this desire because we're made for something more. And this attitude of anticipation continually reminds us of that. It reminds us that we shouldn't be satisfied, that yes, we are from this world, but we cannot be of this world. You know, we go to Sunday Mass. We participate as much as we can. You know, we live good Christian lives. But in the back of our mind, the thought is always, well, I'm probably not going to die today. Or I'm probably, you know, the world isn't going to end today. That's really in the back of our minds, right? Because if we did know when we were going to die or when the second coming was going to happen, I guarantee you we would live incredibly virtuous lives. We would live incredibly virtuous lives if we knew when that moment was going to happen. But we don't. So what do we do as a result? We have to live virtuous lives or try to live virtuous lives all the time. Right? That's the attitude of the Christian, is to be vigilant, to be restless, to not be satisfied for what the world has to offer. And the way in which that happens is by being faithful. We may not be able to understand everything. We may not be able to understand when our life is going to end, when the second coming is going to happen. But faithfulness will always give us the opportunity to be vigilant. Faithfulness will always give us the opportunity to be vigilant. In the second reading, we heard of Abraham, who is called our father in faith. He's not just called our father in faith because, you know, way down the line in our Jewish roots, he was a patriarch. That is true. But he is one of the best examples. He's always held up as one of the best examples of how someone is supposed to be faithful. We heard a summary in the second reading. He was an incredibly old man, and Jesus called him out of where he was to move to another place. And he listened. And then he was going to have kids, even though him and his wife were beyond the years. And he had a kid. He was supposed to have descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And then God said to take that kid and to sacrifice him. Abraham could have asked these questions the entire way. He could have said, Lord, I am too old, I can't move. He could have said, Lord, I'm too old, I can't raise descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. He could have said, Lord, you just gave me a kid, everything that I wanted, and now you want to take him away. He could have had all of these questions. And what was his response? He was faithful. He was faithful the whole time. And that's our response as well. Whenever we have these questions of why something happens, or I don't know when this is going to happen, the response within us has to be one of faith. It can't be one of doubt. It can't be one of questioning. It has to be one of faith in understanding that our knowledge is limited, that we're not able to comprehend everything, that God's knowledge is ultimate in the grand course of time. He has it all planned out. And if we are faithful, then we will be like those good stewards who in the second and the third watch of the night were standing there waiting. And God willing, every single one of us at that opportune moment will be there waiting faithfully for whatever that moment happens to be able to go into the kingdom of heaven, because that's the goal of being a Christian.